Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics.
Hello and welcome to the Cinema Clash. I'm Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net.
Hannah, I didn't watch as many movies as I would have this week because I was watching hockey. And our diverse listeners, half of them are kind of in the D.C. area, half of them are in St. Pete because our main outlet is Radio St. Pete. So for those of us up here in Washington, hooray for the Capitals. For those of you down there in St. Pete,
sorry.
You know, there's always next year. You'll get them next year,
that's
sluggers.
Right. There's still there's still more baseball.
We are recording this in the afternoon on a very hot Memorial Day Friday afternoon, so we're not having any wine.
Just water.
But we're going to talk about – so last week we talked about Deadpool 2. The summer blockbuster season has started. Now that we're at Memorial Day, the official summer movies are starting, and we're starting off with a big, big bang. Solo, a Star Wars story, and you told me you were going to bring something tonight. What did you – and this should shock the audience. What did you go to the grocery store to get that was not there?
I went to the supermarket to get Solo plastic cups because I thought, you know, that would be really fun
they
for our
be there.
Water. But there were none. They weren't selling Solo. I swear.
Maybe they're
I
just
went,
sold out.
I did not see a spot, an empty spot for them on the shelves. I just saw generic plastic party cups and brand and, you know, supermarket brand. But no Solo cups. But it was a stroke of genius if I had actually been able to find them.
I would have laughed. I would have laughed.
I know. So I'm kind of bummed that it was a bust.
Well, this is a Star Wars story. This is not main chronology business. This is not Force Awakens. This is not Last Jedi, where you actually have Jedi. This is like Rogue One, which came out 2 years ago, if you remember that. So therefore, there are no Jedi. There are no lightsabers. There is no Force. This is what you call, like, civilians. These are civilians.
The only lightsaber was someone actually in the audience had brought theirs.
Of course they did. Oh, and we did, we're going to have to compare notes. We saw separate screenings. Mm-hmm. I went to your standard multiplex, saw it in 2D. You went to the National Air and Space Museum 3D IMAX.
It was 2D IMAX, but it was still massive. Massive screen. Packed audience. I did not stay. There was a Q&A afterwards with the guy who plays Chewbacca.
Eunice.
And
Eunice
I figured, Suotone. How much does Chewbacca really have to say that I need to listen to?
If you can say what Chewbacca has to say. There you go. Look at you trying to say what Chewbacca has to say.
So, and it was late and it was a school night. So I actually did leave after the film. But yeah, we will have to compare notes because that's one darn big screen at the
Air and Space
Museum.
I can't believe you skipped Eunice.
I know. Sorry.
So, at the beginning, I think I remember the long time ago, Galaxy Far, Far Away, but there was no boom, big bang, John Williams score, word crawl on the screen. It kind of bummed me out.
There was. There was a little
there
one.
Was a there was blurb a... to set the scene, but it was not the standard, was... we're in space, here's a word crawl.
I thought it was. There was still a mini, there was a mini crawl.
No, it was just like.
So, it took you back to a galaxy far, far away.
But there was no.
But you got some of that throughout the film.
The score, shades of it. There's shades.
The score would just kind of suddenly appear, and that's when people, I felt like they were in their comfort zone with this movie, was when you had those little triggers. And so, I didn't miss the crawl as much, but it definitely is on a smaller scale.
It is a smaller scale film. And even before it was released, a year before it was released, while they were still filming it, it ran into problems. Disney fired the original director duo, Christopher Miller, Phil Lord, who did the Lego movie and Lego Batman movie. These guys are funny. The Lego movie was funny. I really love that movie. And Disney said, we don't like what you're doing. Change it. They said, no, creative differences. They got fired and they brought in Mr. Uber Safe, Ron Howard. Mm-hmm. Now, I have no idea. Nobody knows why the first directors were fired. Was it too light? Was it too dark? Was it too campy? Nobody will say.
I suspect it was probably too campy for what they needed to have this be. And so I think Ron Howard is a safe choice for creating just a good, solid, character-driven, crowd-pleaser with just the right amount of humor and action and drama in it, which is what you get with this. It's not, it's nothing astronomical in terms of where it would rank with the other Star Wars movies, but it is a good, safe, entertaining flick.
Well, for ranking it, compared to the one we just saw, The Last Jedi, I put this way underneath it. In fact, I'd put this under Rogue One. Out of the recent, I don't know, four Star Warses, this is number four for me. It doesn't mean it's bad.
Right.
It just means I connected or enjoyed the previous three more than this. Ron Howard asked George Lucas for any advice. He's like, "You've done this. This is your creation. What should I do?" And George said, "It doesn't really matter what you do. Just remember, always remember, this is for 12-year-olds. Even though it came out in 77, so those who have been here since the beginning are way older than 12. Their grandkids are probably enjoying Star Wars now. So you have to remember, this isn't for us anymore. It's no longer for us. It's been taken away from us. This is for 12-year-olds. Does this fit the bill for 12-year-olds?
Oh, I think it fits the bill for 12-year-olds and up. And maybe even 9-year-olds. I think anybody who's seen the previous Star Wars, like if you're a kid that has been indoctrinated by your parents or grandparents into that Star Wars universe, and you've seen a bunch of them, you can be younger than 12 and still go and enjoy this. The crowd I saw with certainly were not 12-year-olds. They were your sort of millennial geeks is what I think it was filled mostly with, and they all seem to enjoy it. And so I think this is a good family film for those who are already into the Star Wars genre franchise.
I felt a lot of it was kind of plug and play. Mm-hmm. They take what Han Solo said, or allusions he said in the first two films, you know, the original Star Wars and The Empire Strikes Back, and they filled in the blanks. The first time he meets Luke Skywalker in the cantina, he says, "The Millennium Falcon, it did the Kessel Run in 12 parsecs," which we all know is a unit of distance and not time. But, so what do we get in Solo? We get the Kessel Run. We know he ran into Jabba the Hutt later on. There's an allusion to Jabba the Hutt in this movie. Lando Calrissian, mm-hmm. Half of The Empire Strikes Back is, "I know this scoundrel named Lando Calrissian." So who do we meet? Lando, played by
Danny Glover.
Donald Glover.
Donald Glover. Sorry. I knew it was one of those Glovers with a D.
Mr. Smooth, Mr. Yes. Charismatic.
Yeah, no, he's fun to watch. And so, I just definitely liked those throwback moments where you got the elements of the Star Wars story that piece it all together, because this is not your typical, this is not Harrison Ford totally as you know him later. You are kind of getting the beginning of his arc to understand why he's sort of snarky and what motivates him and his upbringing. And so I do like that it fills in some of those pieces for you and is a fun ride at the same time.
We're seeing the initial Han Solo internal tug of war. He's rough on the exterior. He grew up in this Dickensian Oliver Twist street smarts live by your wits scenario. But deep down, he's a good guy. Mm-hmm. It might take him the circuitous route to get there, but he's actually one of the good guys, and he's wrestling with that. I don't think he actually wants to be a good guy. He wishes he could grow out of it or just get rid of it. Of course, he meets Chewbacca. We already mm-hmm. mentioned Eunice. And he kind of joins a gang that they're not really rebels yet against the Empire. There's a beginning of that, but this gang's just kind of out for themselves, out for yours truly. So he hooks up with a man named Tobias Beckett, played by Woody Harrelson. Mm-hmm. Woody gets a major screen time in this film. What do you think of Woody?
I like Woody. When you think about him in Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri and something like that, and then you see him in this kind of movie, which is more along the lines of his characters and something like a Hunger Games, you just realize that he's just got a lot of range. I really think that he's sometimes underrated. And he's good in this role. And so he fits the character well. He's sort of this mercenary mentor to the Han Solo character. And his, you know, takes some interesting twists and turns along the way.
I love the Han Solo casting. It's played by Alden Ehrenreich, and we remember him from the Coen brothers, Hail Caesar. He was my favorite character in Hail Caesar. You have Ralph Fiennes just saying, if only it were so simple. If only it were so simple. It's like, somehow, why are you saying simple?
Somehow I knew that you would bring up if only it were so simple.
So it's great.
It's a fun line.
And his girlfriend or love interest in Solo, her name is Kira. She's played by Emilia Clarke. Most people know her as Daenerys Targaryen from Game of Thrones. If you only watch movies, you know her from Terminator Genesis. She held her own here. Kira's a very strong female character in this film.
She was also in Me Before You, the chick flick, just so you know.
I saw that. I did.
And actually, but my favorite.
Oh, I think I'm going to guess.
My favorite.
I know where it's going.
Character in this film was, and it's not a very, it's, she's not in it for terribly long, but it's Phoebe Waller-Bridge as this droid named L337, and it's a motion capture performance, and she is just, she is a droid for the times.
She's funny.
She's funny, but she's also, she's feisty, and she's a self-made woman slash droid, and like literally, I guess, sort of managed to put herself together from all these parts, and to me, she was, that was like the standout performance, that one that we have to remember at year's end when we're doing our motion capture performance nominations. This is one that I would put at the top of my list right now.
There's a trend in these new Star Wars films where they're getting better with the droids. Back in the day, no one really liked C-3PO. He was annoying, and you almost wish he just wasn't there because he just talked nonsense all the time, and he was just in the way. And then in Rogue One, they had a great droid. K2SO was a fantastic droid to watch. We felt empathy for that droid, and I was sad when he was blown to bits defending his humans. And L337 is now just like that. I really enjoyed watching her. She has her own slight story arc where she runs into a situation and makes choices, and that actually benefits the film.
Absolutely.
Because the film is really just one of those, it's actually a heist film. It's a Western, but it's a heist film. You know, they have to steal something that's impossible to steal and then get away. And it's a self-contained unit, but it opens itself up for, inevitably, it's part of the Star Wars, you know, canon. But it's, of course, it opens itself up for a sequel.
There's always more room for sequels, prequels. I don't even know what you call these things anymore because it's so hard to figure out where they fall into the timeline. But it's hard to imagine anyone other than Harrison Ford as Han Solo. That was sort of the first major hurdle to really cross for this. But I do think Alden Ehrenreich did a really good job of giving you that swagger and pacing and ego that really did come to personify the Harrison Ford version of this character later. So, you know, again, it's not, it won't blow you away, but it's solid for the Memorial Day weekend for sure.
Yeah, it didn't blow me away. It's not great. But on the other hand, I love Star Wars and I'll take what I can get. But I have a feeling people are going to rank this lower down.
In the middle somewhere, but that's okay because they can't all be number one. They can't all be great. And this one is not meant to have that same tone and power that something like Rogue One or the Last Jedi and The Force Awakens. Those just had a lot more going on. This is just a more entertaining version of a Star Wars story.
All right, our next film is kind of a switcheroo. I usually, at least once or even twice a week, make you watch a movie you don't want to watch. You just know you're not going to enjoy it. You're not going to have a good time. It feels like homework. And the switcheroo this week is you did that to me. Mm-hmm. Man, I did not want to watch this movie. Halfway through, just 10 minutes in, I was texting you, what are you doing? I can't handle this movie. Can we just quit and just pretend like we were never going to watch this movie? What am I talking about?
You are talking about summer 1993. And I told you not to pull a Hannah and not to stop it a half hour in and to just give it a chance. And this was before I had finished watching
it. It's a long chance, by the way.
So I'd only just started it myself, but I just had this feeling that you kind of need to stick it out. And even though it was a foreign film in the Catalan language,
which should be right up my alley.
Exactly, with English subtitles. And it's a, observational drama, you know, what I would have typically called slow and you would have reamed me for.
Yep.
But I, in the end, I thought the payoff, the last 15 minutes, worked. And so ultimately, in the end, the more I thought about it, the more I really kind of got what this movie was aiming for. And I understand also why among critics it has a 100% on Rotten Tomatoes right now. Even though it's like a difficult one to get through, it's an autobiographical drama by the writer and director. And based on her own life growing up, I guess, as an orphan and being raised by her aunt and uncle. And that's where this story, that's what it's about. And I just found it in the end to be a way more powerful film after, like, once it sunk in. So I definitely went more your direction with this kind of movie. And I was pleasantly surprised by the impact that it had on me after it was over.
If you want to feel old, realize that there was a 6-year-old in 1993 who's already old enough to make a movie reminiscing about it.
Yeah, so it's...
It's true. Think about that.
I mean, it's... But
that makes me feel old.
Yeah, but it's about how this woman remembers what it was like as a 6-year-old to have to deal with a tragedy and to overcome this tremendous loss and how difficult that was for her. And so I did, and the kids in this movie, so this girl, the 6-year-old Frida, played by Leia Artigas, she is great. And then there's this little girl who's probably supposed to be like 3, a toddler named Anna, and she's played by this girl, Paula Robles, and I would love to see what happens with her down the line, because I thought as this toddler, she was quite phenomenal playing the cousin to Frida, who you just constantly feel like might be in danger from her cousin, and you're kind of on edge throughout this movie. And the fact that this 6-year-old and toddler could really carry this film, I thought was quite impressive.
Those child actresses were phenomenal. In fact, I think the 3-year-old out-acted the 6-year-old.
Yeah,
she was really
good.
I appreciated the fact that it's in the Catalan language. It was Spain's official entry for the Oscars Best Foreign Film. It was not nominated, but it received the Best First Film Prize at the Berlin Film Festival. It was National Border Review's one of their top 5 foreign films. So we're talking alongside A Fantastic Woman, which ended up winning the Oscar, and The Square, everybody's favorite movie. This was one of those top 5. I don't know if you saw this or not. It reminded me of the Florida Project a little bit.
Yes, I actually made that same note that it reminded me of that as well, with certainly with the pacing and
this was way slower than the Florida
Project.
With
the children, but I like the payoff of this one way better than the Florida
Project. You're
right
about the ending.
I cried.
Suffering through this movie, and finally, towards the end, it started to click. You know, Frida, she's a city girl. She leaves Barcelona after her mother dies. So she's now an orphan. She moves to the countryside, and she's just not used to it. She doesn't know all this, surrounded by trees. Time moves differently there. She has new feelings she's never felt before because she has a sister. She's never really felt jealousy. And we can see her saying, whoa, I don't like jealousy. It is a very, very personal film, and it's laid back, and for a while it feels pointless until you realize... This is a 6-year-old who has gone through tragedy but does not understand tragic feelings. And when they pop out, she doesn't know when they're coming, and they just happen. And finally, people around here realize, there's something. Eventually, a child psychologist should get involved with Frida.
And I think that's really where this film finds its sweet spot, is it really does provide this raw, authentic kind of viewpoint that a child psychologist would probably think was pretty much on target, about, you know, the child psychology after trauma and trying to process everything that's happened. And so the fact that that the writer and director, Carla Simone, actually was basing this story on her own memories, I think that probably is what lends itself to that authenticity. Granted, it is a tough one to stick with, but I do think that the payoff makes the journey worthwhile. So if you're able to kind of stick with it, then I think you'll get it at the end, and that's why I think it's doing as well as it is. But you have to be captivated. I think it's best seen in a theater.
Oh, yeah, because you'll fall asleep if you don't.
You might just, check in and out, which really doesn't work, because then you wouldn't quite get why the ending is as powerful as it is.
No, the actual last shot, the last scene, saved the entire mm-hmm. film from I don't it's, care.
Yes, no, exactly.
And I was appreciative that the long slog, that the marathon that I just completed, did not end in a violent or a twist ending. Mm-hmm. I thought they were setting me up for that, and mm-hmm. I would have been just pissed.
I was getting very... I was getting a little annoyed and stressed at where this might go.
Because you could see where it,
you could they, see they, all these where they wanted it to go. Where it could have gone a very different way, and you don't really know. And I definitely, I shed a tear at the end of this one. I did.
All right, our next film, it is kind of one of those I forced on you. Mm-hmm. I didn't force, but...
it was a mutual...
I wanted to watch it because it's got a local flavor. Yes. Soller's Point is from Baltimore, and it's from kind of Baltimore's own, Baltimore's local boy, Matthew Porterfield. This is his fourth film, and they're all set in Baltimore. And you can tell it's authentic because he says, "We're from Dundalk."
That's right.
And it's like, that's an area, even I've never been there, but that's an area I've been told, don't go. Don't go to Dundalk.
Go to Dundalk. It's down by the water, you know. It's...
When Keith goes into a bar, he orders a whiskey shot and a bow. He's like, oh, only people from Maryland are going to understand natural bohemian.
I'm from Baltimore, and I didn't get that.
Well, he's got a little accent going on, which they have in Dundalk. They mm-hmm. have a distinct accent, so I can understand if you didn't hear the boat.
Okay.
So we're talking blue collar, not inner city Baltimore, but outer, kind of rural area Baltimore. And Keith is fresh out of prison, / fresh out of 9 months of home detention, with an ankle bracelet, and he can finally get out and restart his life. He's only 26. He screwed up. We don't know exactly what he did, but it probably involved drugs. And he's got choices now. I can get back on my feet, maybe go to community college, get a job, vocational training, or I can fall back into my old ways, continue in the gang I had to join in prison to survive. And it's a little too over. I felt it was a little too overt. He's talking to his grandma, and she explicitly says, "You have two choices, son." Like, really, way to spell it out for us.
Yeah.
But overall, I enjoyed Soller's Point, not just because it's a local story, but because this kid has, the tough choices to make can really put his life on the good track. But one stupid, impulsive choice can ruin the rest of his life.
But what bothered me is that he continues to make stupid choices. And so you root for him, and there's a likability to this character, but at the same time, you get so frustrated when he makes the wrong move and makes the wrong turn. And granted, he's frustrated because you get this sense that he wants to walk the straight and narrow. He wants to get his life back on track, but all the forces are against him, trying to get a real job when you've got, when you're an ex-con. And people not necessarily trusting you, but he then really does nothing to restore faith that to restore any faith that his friends and family and others might have in him. And so I was frustrated by this character. And unlike the ending of Summer 1993, this is one of those kind of open-ended endings that will not be very satisfying to a lot of people.
I didn't love the ending, but I see why he ended it right there. And I loved the movie poster with him sitting on the trunk and when the car's in the water.
I love that his eye color perfectly matches his shirt at the opening scenes of this film.
I did not notice
totally
that.
Greenish blue. Oh,
but
yeah.
Keith's industrious. Like, he's plucky. He takes nothing, and he can actually make something out of nothing. He does. He runs around town in his little Corolla, and he's spinning a web. Like, he can make a life. But, man, he just shoots himself in the foot. Mm-hmm. And he is, he's got an ex-girlfriend who wants nothing to do with him, who he's still in love with. And we've seen her frequently. She's played by Zazie Beetz. We've seen her in Atlanta, opposite Donald Glover. She's his on and off girlfriend in that show Atlanta, and we also just saw her as Domino in Deadpool 2.
Oh.
She is so underused in this film, by the way. I don't know why Zazie Beetz is in this film. She'd get like two scenes. And his dad, who plays his dad?
Jim Belushi, who also does not really get his due in this film. He's fine in this role, but he kind of just pops in and out. And he's this dad who you feel for him, too, that he's trying to be supportive of his kid. And yet it's kind of one of those... Dude, it's time. You got to get yourself a job and get back on your feet.
The dad's like us. The mm-hmm. son frustrates the hell out of him, and he sees all the potential in the world. He's like, what are you doing to yourself? I noticed that director Matthew Porterfield loves the long-distance wide shot. We're always way in the back just kind of watching Keith do what he does. And Keith, he's played by McCall Lombardi. I checked. He is Vince Lombardi's grandson.
Wow.
Vince Lombardi's grandson is an actor, and he acts in Soller's Point. And I wonder, maybe I'm reading too much into this, is Matthew Porterfield trying to say something about modern American life?
I don't know. I mean, it's this typical sort of gritty Baltimore approach, and I think he's probably also trying to say something about the judicial system, the legal system, the prison system, and whether or not it really becomes impossible for people to rehabilitate because the chances there is no, they might not feel that there's a second chance for them. And it's too easy to get sucked back into the very same world that that caused you to get in trouble in the first place. It's a slow drama again.
Than Summer 1993.
It was faster than Summer 1993, ultimately, while I was watching it. It certainly didn't feel as slow as 1993, but it didn't get me to that same sort of end point of satisfaction that one did. So, you know, it is very gritty. It's talking about the... just, you know, unemployment and neglect and community, you know, the whole issue with segregation and just all kinds of things that is trying to layer in the social commentary. Whether or not it really all hangs together and works, I'm not so sure.
No, he doesn't tie it up with a bow or anything, but there are those sub-themes in there, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And finally, there is a character named Wasp. Okay. Yes, W-A-S-P, Wasp. Our final film, which I made you watch because I knew you would like it, because I just chuckled and got a kick out of it, is a documentary called Troll Inc. You won't find this in the theater. This is strictly video on demand. Troll Inc. is one of those, it's a companion piece. It's in this new subgenre I've noticed, like about technical justice, technology, and this is a subgenre of documentaries. It reminded me of We Are Legion, the story of the hacktivists from 2012, which just kind of taught us about what's going on in hacking land, and remind me of 2014's The Internet's Own Boy, the story of Aaron Swartz. Troll Inc. is about Andrew Weave Orenheimer, and it's saying the whole film is really warnings of free speech. There are limits to free speech, and turns out pissing people off on the internet is a crime. Because I'm not sure what he actually did was a crime that he went to prison for, but pissing people off on the internet, he's the ultimate troll. Like, you do not want to, I don't want to hang out with this guy. He does terrible things to get what he calls lulls. But pissing people off on the internet to a certain extent is a crime now.
Well, but in some ways it should be, because when you think about all the backlash against what Russia did in terms of interfering with social media and with what people were seeing and how they were seeing it and clickbait, this guy's doing the same freaking thing. And so I think that's the difference for me was I kind of related this more to like a Snowden kind of documentary.
What?
Which you never see. And I thought, man, this, I empathize more with Snowden's motivations than I could with this guy. This guy's sole motivation is just pissing people off.
Yeah, but
annoying
Snowden
people.
Gave away the keys to the kingdom.
This guy
never did that.
This guy's messing with information.
He found something that AT&T was too lazy to do.
But that was the one thing that caused him to go to jail.
Which AT&T even said wasn't a crime.
It wasn't. And so I'm not sure he should have been prosecuted for it. But the fact that he and his followers just make a game out of what they call culture jamming and tricking media outlets into covering what they know is total BS because they know that all the there's sort of this clickbait mentality that, you know, give them what they want. So even if it's completely made up. And, you know, we have to deal with that with it's the same thing with, you know, it's like Trump wanting to be an agitator and thriving on the agitation. And that's just not good for the country right now. And so I liked the first part of this film. I thought it was well paced. I was getting into it. It was interesting. But about halfway through, I did not like it anymore because I did not like this guy. And I was bored with him. I didn't care anymore whether or not he went to jail. I did not believe that he had any real reason for doing what he was doing other than to just rattle people unnecessarily. And so by the end, I was just absolutely ready to turn it off.
Weave appears to be just as smart as, you know, certain people. Steve Jobs and Wozniak went corporate. They founded a behemoth company and they invented things, and that's the route they went. Elon Musk went independent. I have all these ideas and I have all this money now from PayPal and eBay and all that stuff, so I'm gonna do what I want to do. I'm gonna go up in space. Weave seems he's a genius. This guy is smart. He could have gone one of those two directions, but he decided just to have fun with it. And his version of fun. You know, there really is no crime if being an a-hole. And this guy is an a-hole, like to the max.
But there's a crime in misleading and providing false information.
No, but it's not a crime to stand out,
there's a
smoke and
moral.
lie. Like, remember the Dominique Strauss-Kahn part when he was like, hey, he bet his buddies, I'll be in the French press by tomorrow.
Right.
You know, and that's not a crime.
It's not a
They didn't,
crime, but
the fact checkers didn't do their jobs.
But it's a morality play that I think.
No, he has no morals.
He has no
morals. He has
morals.
No morals. I would not, you do not want to have drinks with this guy.
Yeah, but the scary thing is that he's got people who do want to have drinks with this guy and who do follow his lead. And who it the film does succeed in showing you just how ridiculously easy it is to troll, and just how gullible everyone is to the trolls. And it's just talk about a sad commentary on society.
But it's timely. So remember they showed 1998 congressional hearings. It's called The Loft. Guys came and they warned Congress. It's very like right now in a half hour we could shut down the internet if we wanted to. It's very easy. And right now is the 20th anniversary of that, and they're still saying the same things. We could still shut down the internet in a half hour if we wanted to. Granted, a few things have gotten better, more secure, but most of the time, corporations and companies that have your information are just lazy, and I can go get anything about you I want to. No one's, you know, people should be more worried about this than they are. The film does not focus on that. It touches it, but it doesn't fully address it because this is not about that. This is about Weave.
Well, it's about Weave ultimately, but it doesn't start out that way. Like it sort of weaves that in actually after the film is sort of underway, and I think it's designed to it should be a cautionary tale for all media outlets. The problem is that this kind of stuff, it's not even legit. There are illegitimate media outlets that can pick up on this kind of stuff and put it out there and spread it. And then sometimes what happens too is, as you said, lazy outlets then just kind of run with it because it is clickbait. And so there is a responsibility that I think this film highlights on, you know, on those in charge of these places to be like, okay, did we check our facts here? Do we know who this guy really is? But unfortunately, if it draws eyeballs, then people are going to say, hey, no harm, no foul. We might have put some false information out there, but look at all the people that came to our site and clicked. And therefore, we're going to make more money, get more ad dollars, and all's fine with the world. And that's just kind of sad.
You know, even though it doesn't have a theatrical release, I do think there's still an audience for this. You know, if you go to hardcore at the beach this weekend and you just want to relax at night and pull this up on video on demand, or if you've ever been on 4chan, you'd probably get a kick out of this documentary and be like, oh yeah, I remember when that happened, or oh, that's how that turned out.
And certainly if you've already seen and like an other hacktivism sort of documentary.
Yeah, this really falls into line with those other two I mentioned. Yeah. Right, back to back.
So it's the same same target demo, and so if you liked one, you'll like the others.
All right, to wrap up this Memorial Day episode, we started with The Big Bang, Solo, A Star Wars Story. I'm happy there's more Star Wars. I'll take it. But it didn't knock my socks off.
Yeah, I liked it. I think it's really your only option for a family-friendly film for the Memorial Day weekend if you've seen everything else that's out there that's, superhero-esque.
Summer 1993, don't watch it on your couch. You won't make it. But honestly, if you happen to make it towards the finish line, it's worth it just for the last shot.
It is. The last 15 minutes just makes it work. And child psychologists and anyone taking child psychology classes, this would be a great movie to see.
Soller's point is for those of us that live in the DMV, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, especially if you ever just do Saturdays in Baltimore, have ever heard of Dundalk or drank a natty boat.
Or maybe if you watch The Wire religiously, you might
Don't compare it to The Wire.
Not quite.
No.
Yeah.
Maybe you're a big Jim Belushi fan.
If I had to choose from the indies of the week, Summer 1993 beats Soller's Point.
I'm undecided about that. I don't know. Finally, the one documentary this week, Troll Inc. It's really hot outside. Maybe I don't want to go out and get in the hot car, so I just pull this up on Video On Demand and... yeah, it's not great, but it combines with other documentaries to complete a bigger picture.
Yeah, but I put it in the kind of category. Meh.
All right. Well, once again, congratulations, Capitals. Sorry, Lightning. Thank you for listening to The Cinema Clash. I'm Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of ChickFlix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt.Pete.com.